Blog Talk Radio.
Own the Vision Radio. Exposing you to the people, places, and organizations that will help you own your vision of success. Coming to you live every Tuesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern. Seeding your mind so we can seed the change that we want to be. And now your host, Jason Lee.
What's going on, people? Welcome to the first episode of Own the Vision Radio. In the studio tonight, we have amazing visionary thought leader. I mean, I don't know what else to say about this king. James J. Bailey. Tell the folks hello, James.
Man, brother, I don't know if I deserve all of that accolade, but I am certainly humbled and honored to be your first guest and first show. Brother, I've always been a big fan, man, and a part of the Own the Vision team. So, honored to be here.
Well, we're excited about you being here. We're excited about you telling your story. And for our first-time listeners and everyone, we want to create a show and an atmosphere to push the positive messages, tell people about the amazing people, organizations, and occupations. Because just like you say, if there's no exposure, people don't know. And we want us to, you just kind of tell your story from working in a major nonprofit organization, starting a major nonprofit organization, working in real estate, running a private equity fund, leading a Boy Scout troop. I mean, all at a very young age.
You know, Jason, I think that everybody has a story, and I'm always urging people, regardless of how dark or how cloudy or how mistake-laden their story may be, it's a part of you. It's part of owning your vision. It's that toughness and those things that you've been through to create the person that you are. So never run from your story. And for me, man, you know, I was just talking to my wife just a second ago, talking about me wanting to talk to my dad about how the hell did they leave this kid alone in the house all the time to fend for himself. Had to be illegal, but a regular guy, man. I was born in Atlanta, raised in Decatur, South DeKalb County, Columbia Drive, Greenwood Road. Two working class parents that moved from rural Georgia to the big city to try to make it big. Never had any real money, but we weren't poor at all. I mean, we were rich in love, working class, and but I was a latchkey kid. So I spent a lot of time by myself. You know, I tell people often I was a horrible student, brother. Very smart, branded gifted in kindergarten, but I treated school like construction work. At 3 o'clock when the bell rang, here's my hard hat, give my lunch pail, and I'm done. But where things took a big shift for me was because I was always an enterprising kid. I was the kind of kid that would sell, you know, popsicles I made in the ice tray for 10 cents. Hell, there was one time I even charged people a quarter to fight in my backyard so they wouldn't get caught in the front yard. But but I was riding my bike down Candler Road to the barbershop. And when I was growing up, man, you could have put a Bentley next to a Ferrari. And every day of the week, I'd have taken a Mustang GT 5.0. Every day of the week. And when I pull up to the barbershop, I see parked illegally in front of the shop a black-on-black convertible Mustang GT 5.0 on triple gold date. Man, I
you
lost
dating yourself, brother.
brother, I'm fine with that. I'm good with the times that I grew up in. But I lost my mind. I threw my bike down on the side of town. You don't leave anything unlocked. Ran into the barbershop and screamed out at 11 years old, whose car is that? My barber's cutting somebody's hair. He just gives me the little nod of approval, which let me know that it was his. And instantly, man, because of where I was from, I knew he had to be a drug dealer. No judgment on him, but I knew in my 11-year-old logic that with me paying you $5 to cut my hair, there's no way that you could afford that car. So when I hop in his car, I hop in his chair, I ask him a question. You know, John, I know you're a dope boy. And he screams at me, tells me to shut up and count how many chairs I saw in that shop. I counted 10. He said, well, each one of these barbers pays me $50 a week to cut hair in my shop. Do the math. So I did the math. He said, hold on, before you finish, man, I got two more shops just like this. Finish the math. So Lil' J Bailey was like 000, 0, and it clicked for the first time ever. He said, Jay, I'm an entrepreneur. I own my own business. What you need to do is go find something you love and go make money doing it. Part of the problem is, brother, nobody teaches us about ownership, ever. So that bike ride home fundamentally changed my way of thinking. I looked at everything different, that fish store, the tire shop, the McDonald's, the public library. Who owns it? Mom, Dad, do we own our own house? Self-esteem, self-confidence goes up. And I think at the very heart of poverty or a poverty mindset is self-esteem and self-confidence. So I started my first business at 12. The House of Boom, my thing was car stereo equipment, big speakers in cars, amplifiers, pull-out radios, etc. And I can attribute, brother, and I don't know how much time we have, but the shortened version is I only graduated from college because I had my own business, because I was able to take my aspiration to be successful in business, match it to my education, school became relevant, and I took off. Because if I had to measure a cubic foot of airspace to build a speaker enclosure, you know what, that's STEM education. And I started to understand why I was in school, not just for my teacher's sake, not for my parents' sake, but I had my own enlightened self-interest. And everything began to click. I went on to college at University of Georgia. Unfortunately, had a tragic occurrence at 19, lost my mother. My father and I went separate ways. So I was really a young, really hurt and depressed kid, 19, but I bought my first house when I was 19 in Athens. Still a hustler, still an entrepreneurial spirit. I figured I could buy a four-bedroom house and rent out three bedrooms to my frat brothers, and that would cover the mortgage. But left there, worked for Hershey Foods Corporation, did the corporate route for a while. After I left Hershey, came back to Atlanta to take care of my grandparents, worked for a consulting company for a while. Did really well there, but one of my clients is Bank of America. And I got enough money and did enough well enough with sales with Bank of America. They asked me to come work for them. And while at Bank of America, the real estate market in Atlanta had taken off. And, you know, just like a kid who was entrepreneurial, on his own, stupid, not a whole lot of role models, I had customers bring me checks for $100,000 every other week. And of course, I would ask them, well, what do you do? Just like any kid, there's no difference in a kid, me, or a kid in the hood that sees the guy driving around with the flashy car or the nice clothes or have money in his pocket. Just the sheer curiosity of what do you do? That aspiration kicks in. And it was real estate. And the short version of my story, brother, I did very well in real estate for a short amount of time, doing every kind of deal, but I didn't know much about my industry. So for a kid that was living in a 10,000-square-foot house and was investing in million-dollar homes, by the time I was 26, by the time I was 28, brother, I was dead broke and homeless. When the bottom fell out of the market and the market tanked, I lost everything. So I went from living in condos downtown Atlanta, 10,000-square-foot homes and country clubs, to sleeping in a 9x9 storage facility off of Mountain Industrial Boulevard in Tucker. It had gotten so bad that I got a 6-month provisional membership at LA Fitness on La Vista Road, just so I could take showers. And so, you know, this story of ebbs and flows and ups and downs and loss really is the thread that really made me who I am today, because in that storage container,
I really realized that I had lived a life of what the world would call success with cars and clothes and all that kind of stuff, but I had zero significance, and I really wanted to start chasing significance, and that's what led me down the path to find Operation Hope, to later start the Phoenix Leadership Foundation, and to really lead this conscious capitalism movement where we're looking at how do we build up our communities and not just find individual wealth. This communal wealth perspective that says, okay, how can we build institutions? How can we build communities? And how can we build generational wealth?
Awesome, awesome. You know, one of the things you talked about earlier was starting a business. And you talked about that the barber saying he's a business owner. I want you to talk a little bit about the difference between starting a job and building a business.
You know, I think that I often think about two generations before us, and in some cases three, where oppression and segregation, prejudice, racism, a number of different societal ills compelled our ancestors to build for themselves, to create institutions that serve their needs because other institutions refuse to. And I look forward to now, and even in a city like Atlanta where we are, I used to have a really nice office up on the 40th floor of the 191 Peachtree Building. I used to look out at the skyline. And as much as we would claim that Atlanta's the black Mecca, that we run things in Atlanta, this is the ideal place for African American and black folks, I used to look out of my window, Jason, and realize that I looked at that skyline from Buckhead to Bankhead and back again. And I didn't see one building that we owned or controlled. When you start talking about proximity to power and the appearance of wealth, in my mind, that's what we're talking about. And, of course, there is absolute honor and necessity in great jobs and forward mobility. But there's equal necessity in building institutions that serve our needs. And ownership provides a particular amount of freedom that a job may not. And I think both have their place in our economy. Both have their place in our community, but we always, always have to keep our eye on institutions that we build that have a certain purpose, a specific purpose, and an intentional reason on why they're there. So in starting a business, you know, that you can create a job for yourself, work really hard to replace a salary. But when you're starting to create a business, the type of thing where you're giving the opportunity for other people to develop their livelihood, to send their kids to college, the type of institution where you're giving opportunities to people that otherwise would not have opportunities, where you have more of a global impact and a local impact than just hiring one or two people or fortifying your own bank account. We're talking about community building when you're talking about true businesses. The ripple effect of starting your own true business goes a lot further than just creating a job for yourself. And in these days and times, brother, for where our community is now, most of all, we need hope. But at the end of that hope, we need jobs. And if we're going to eradicate poverty, a lot of that has to start from within our community, and a lot of that has to deal with building our own institutions.
Sorry, bless you for a second. That's awesome. You know, one of the things about the show is talking about what people are doing that is amazing in our community across the country. And, you know, I've worked with you a number of times, but I want you to tell the people a little bit about the Phoenix Leadership Academy, Foundation.
Well, it was born out of, you know, you always, whenever you go into nonprofit work, I always question people about their why. And if they haven't really solidified their why, perhaps they're not ready to dive into nonprofit work. foundation work or whatever they're passionate about. And for me, it was born out of a fear of extinction. You know, for a while, Atlanta Public Schools had a graduation rate for black males that was less than 40%. If you match that with booming incarceration rates, soaring recidivism rates, high mortality rates or low mortality rates, leading categories in HIV and AIDS, murder, a number of different things, health issues from diabetes, heart disease, prostate cancer, you name it. If you put all of the things that were working against black males into an equation or an algorithm, no economist, no mathematician, no statistician could extend that line out another 100 years, and it looked positive. And in my sphere, almost to the point of extinction. So I knew that I had to do something. I didn't set out to solve any problems, but I set out to certainly do my part. And with the Phoenix Leadership Foundation this year, we took a bold move to cut our mission statement, to get rid of all the flowery language, and just to make our mission statement one word, exposure. I think the greatest contributing factor to poverty is lack of exposure. And for our kids, who some live in communities where they only live their existence in a 10-square block area. And if you only know what you see, how are these kids able to dream if they have this really limited scope of what's possible? So we set out to absolutely expose youth in Atlanta, and soon as we scale out around the country and perhaps around the world, those youth to the possibilities of themselves, to plug kids in. In the hood, the plug is the person you get everything from. If he's a dope dealer, if he's the guy you get stolen goods from, or if your lights get cut off, you need a little money to get you through to the next paycheck, go to the plug. Well, it's time for us to be the plug for our kids, plugging them into opportunities, plugging them into role models, plugging them into institutions and situations that will help them flourish. So at the end of the day, Phoenix Leadership Foundation is all about exposure at every level, because I'm just a firm believer in role models. Kids have this brilliance, especially kids in the hood. I love talking to, you know, it's one of my passions, but talking to the kids that are trapped, and especially kids that feel that the only way that they can make it is to deal dope. But if you find me a dope dealer, Jason, it's not a dumb kid. This kid understands import, export, wholesale, retail, supply, demand, customer retention, all with a gun to his head. But not only that, if you find a kid that's running a crew, this kid has a group of kids who are mostly high school dropouts. Most of them have violent felony records. Most of them carry guns, and they will follow their every command. That's a super leader. Just a misdirected one that wasn't exposed to opportunities beyond the streets. I want to find that
Absolutely.
Kid. I want to find that kid every time, because we're talking about real GDP growth for our country if we start to maximize the talent and skills of our kids that come from communities where they have this built-in survival mechanism. They have the heart of a lion to survive through all of the stuff that they have to endure as a child. But think of on the other side, if we turn that potential into positivity. It's a powerful way to think about what our future could look like.
You know, that's the great part about this, and one of the reasons we started the radio show. That's what you said, exposure. You know, you do a lot of amazing work in the community here in Atlanta and around the country, but people won't know about it if we're not exposed to it.
Sure.
People won't know, and I'm going to segue into what you do on the other side of life, which is private equity. Some people don't even know what private equity is. You know, a few may be Googling it right now, but, you know, that's a foreign piece, because growing up in our communities, you could be a teacher. You know about doctors, you know about lawyers, you know about barbers and mechanics. You even know about accountants. But private equity is something that is not exposed into our community. You know, one, I want to applaud you for what you do from a nonprofit and a for-profit. And, you know, we want to show more people that the sky is not the limit. You can reach as high as you want to. And what you're doing with the children, we're excited about. And we're excited on the Vision Foundation to partner with you on our major initiative here in Atlanta. So before you talk about private equity, let's talk a little bit about what the Give 12 Project is going to do to help you expand what you guys are already doing.
You know, it's and I think you have a brilliant concept, brother, because I'm a firm believer that Superman ain't coming. And the answers and the solutions to help our community are only waiting on us to have the courage to act. And you have always been a brother of action. So even with your initiative, one of the things that we're wanting to bring to the market is a new learning platform. Similar to project-based learning, which is the widely accepted methodology that's in schools currently, the next evolution of that is what we call aspiration-focused learning. And within aspiration-focused learning, this is connecting direct inputs from our youth on what are their dreams, aspirations, what are their hopes. You can go into schoolhouses now and you can talk to principals, counselors, teachers, and you can ask them, okay, what does Johnny want to do? What's his biggest dream? And they don't have a clue. I talk about my own story when I had my aspiration that made school relevant and I decided to take off because it clicked for me. We're trying to connect those dots. So there's a big initiative. We're going to be partnering with LinkedIn and Microsoft most likely and having some conversations there to do a national census with youth, asking them three questions. What is your biggest dream? What do you want to do? And what problem do you want to solve? And working through social scientists, extracting the data that we can pull from those three questions about entrepreneurial energy, aspirations, hopes, dreams, or even identifying those kids that don't have the aspiration, hopes, and dreams, which is also critically important. We're able to triage and apply aspirational focused learning. If a kid wants to be a firefighter, he seems like he wants to get into a fight in school, the only alternative before is to suspend him for 3 days. But what if that same kid, we looked at his file and through this data that we're able to create, it says, wait a minute, Johnny wants to be a firefighter. So rather than sending him home for 3 days, we're sending him to Ladder House 22. And for the next 3 days, he's going to be sweeping up floors, but he's going to be around firefighters. The
Absolutely.
Very thing that he wanted to do. Or if we know in this three clusters of schools, we've got 78 kids that want to be doctors. Well, we can pull up buses to each of those schools, create a cohort of peers that can motivate within their cohort because they all have the same aspiration. But that morning, we can take them to a group of doctors where they can sit and talk and listen to people that are actually in the profession and learn what it takes to become successful. But let's say that afternoon, we take them to Morehouse School of Medicine, where they're talking to actual professors and students and learn what it takes to actually become a doctor. These kids, they're ready and willing. But the thing is they lack the roadmap to be able. That's why we call it an aspiration-based learning experience, ABLE. And that's what we want to do, back to exposure. We want to give kids the keys to their success, and we want to connect it through their input, not just telling kids that you can be anything that you want. Not taking a whole group and exposing them to, let's say, engineering. And maybe there are two kids that get it and want to become engineers. But what about the other 28 in the classroom?
Exactly.
With direct input from kids, understanding what they believe, hearing them, seeing them, feeling them, and then connecting them with those things that will allow them to soar with role models. And then also on the other side of that is volunteer engagement. Mentorship is great. It is needed. I participate in it. I'm a big fan of it. But unfortunately, most of us don't get mentors. We don't get that person that holds our hand and walks us through the steps to be successful. Most of us become who we are because of role models. things that we see, people that we hear about, things that we observe, things that we read. And what my this real aspiration-focused learning focuses on is now that accountant, because I believe 70% of us are actively disengaged. We want to do more. We don't know if we can find the time or the connectivity. But if I find an accountant who may have never mentored anybody in his life, but I connect him to 15 kids that want to be him or her, you don't have to make up any curriculum. I don't need to train you on anything. You don't have to question if these kids are even paying attention or listening. No, these kids want to be you. So they are zeroed into your every word. And so through technology, we'll be able to build cohorts all over the country who are able to consistently send out relevant data to kids based on their aspiration. So a kid that wants to be a dentist is continually getting messages from dentists from around the country, is continually getting information about symposiums or workshops or opportunities or scholarships or the top five dental schools in America to apply to, but relevant information based on their aspiration, wanting to connect kids, make school relevant, watch our kids soar.
So, you know, our goal is to see – our goal is to see you all $100,000 over the next 12 months.
Absolutely.
With that $100,000, how many young people are you going to be able to impact?
Well, you know, and with that $100,000, Mom, and bless you for even having the vision to put this together, we'll start on our technology. I mean, I'm thinking of creating this app, partnering with LinkedIn, where kids are able to give their input. We're able to put out very relevant data immediately on role models in their area, right in that time, real time, people that they can engage with who they aspire to be. You know, the numbers are almost limitless, Jason. When we're talking about on-the-ground programmatic, our goal is once we go live with the program is to reach 7,500 kids in our first year of existence. But through technology, we haven't gotten the numbers back yet. But we can have the technology in place where we can reach a kid in Idaho or Michigan or Montana. Because when you start talking about class, you get raised for free. So we're really looking at underserved kids all over the place that need hope, that need exposure.
Exactly.
And so, yeah, brother, with that kind of lift to build out the technological infrastructure and the back end to source that data, spin that data around and spit back out to kids the type of influence and exposure they need to be successful. But, you know, it's you can't measure it. So it could go from hundreds of kids to thousands of kids. And if we're successful, millions of kids.
You know, the great thing about it, it doesn't take much. And so for all our listeners that are listening for the first time, and this is the first time they heard about the Give 12 Project, I'm going to break it down just a little bit. So city specific, we're taking 12,000 people in Atlanta to donate $12 a month for the next 12 months. With that 12,000 people, we're going to seed 9 organizations at $100,000 each. So for Jay and his organization, he will be able to touch a limitless amount of young people. The other organizations, they will be able to meet their mission and goal all in a year. But we're not going to stop there. We're seeding 12 entrepreneurs, $25,000 each. And it's not that you're competing with people in a not segment. Four entrepreneurs that just have an idea will get $25,000 each. You don't have to have an LLC, an S-Corp, incorporation, what have you. You just have to have an idea and the ability to articulate that to a judge. Four entrepreneurs that in the startup phase, 0 to 5 years, they will also receive $25,000. And then four entrepreneurs in the 5 years or more existing business category will receive $25,000. You know, like you said before, we can't wait on anybody to save us. We have to see the change we want to see. And we're excited to be partnering with you. We're excited to be able to push your vision as we own the vision for success for our community.
Well, brother, we're honored to be a part. And as you know, I've already made my deposit, and I'm in with you, and I believe in you. And, yes, sir, I think that the power and putting the power back into the hands of the people, giving them an opportunity to get involved, get engaged, and help move our communities forward is the answer.
We're gonna take a quick break. I want to play you guys this song by a young person. We just talked about young people. This guy's 17 years old, Omari the Great. When I say a lyrical genius, he wrote a song and released it a couple days ago. It's called Pledge of Allegiance to My People. And Omari just had his birthday is actually today. So you guys can find him on YouTube, Google Omari the Great. But we're going to go to a break, listen to his song really quick. After the break, Jay, I want you to talk a little bit about private equity, and we'll get some questions from callers. So as soon as we come after the break, we're going to talk about some private equity. But right now we're going to pledge allegiance with Omari the Great, hip-hop 17-year-old superstar, and does not use one bad word.
I love it.
One nation under the Most High, from segregation and rights being denied to liberation. This is our song cry for my melanated people. Put your hands in the sky. The black of the berry, sweet as the juice. What a concoction of greatness was grated out of this food. Created doctrines of hatred and still we fight to break loose. Physically hanging, now our mentality is inside a noose. Black history books I read, intrigued as I'm turning chapters of QEP and my spirit animals, my Black Panthers. Ride for my people, go against us and you press my buttons. On the front line at 17 with choppers, Bobby Hutton. I tell my people stand up when people looking down to us. Downtown ACL protesting, those cops were surrounding us. I look around and slowly appear this smile on my face. I'm just the young ones for my people, cause I love my race. And we can't be replaced, never, cause we mean too much. Thoughts of freedom on them plantations like we dream too much. Appreciative of my black elders, man, they seem too much. My generation's next, give them something to believe through us. One nation under the Most High. Segregation and rights being denied. Liberation, this is our song cry. For my melanated people, put your hands in the sky. You can stand up and raise your right fist up. Says you can stand up and raise your right fist up. Says you can stand up and raise your right fist up. We the birth of our own nation. Pledge allegiance. Sometimes I feel like MLK in this. Society's biased, I'm not okay with this. With patience. Hard to stand by us, they chillin', breaking us. They choose to give us people like our Oprahs and Harveys, but they refuse to give us our Angela Davis and Garveys. Royalties in our core, naturally we are pure. All praise to Dr. Sabie, I praise Asada Shakur. Biopics on our people, they displaying it now. Showing that greatness, black and proud, the shames of saying it loud. I'm about making sure our people are respected. From Carl Bear his peanuts to CJ Walker's cosmetics. Remember movements like the SCLC, even the freedom writers. Now I'm more feeling really with it, cause I'm a freedom writer. So blessed to be a part of a culture and even heritage. His richest mind, though they try, there's no use neglecting it. But thought I was the king, there's no need for me to be settling. Who would have thought the power I possessed was in this melanin? One nation under the Most High. segregation and rights being denied to liberation. This is a song cry for my melanated people. Put your hands in the sky. Stand up and raise your right fist up. Said you can stand up and raise your right fist up. Said you can stand up and raise your right fist up. We the birth of our own nation. Pledge allegiance to us. Growing up, I was intrigued by my color, and I appreciated it. Would never hate on my brother. Pro-black, not anti-white is what my pops always said. I had a balance between being MLK and being Detroit Red. Looked up so many who for my freedom had let bloodshed, and prayed I'd be the next black hope before going to bed. No Black History Month because it doesn't need titles. Don't need a month to acknowledge William Du Bois my idol. It hurts me to see us blind, hurts me to see us suffer from a system that's in place by throwing shade at each other. When Martin had a dream and Huey had to pump cop, when Malcolm was in that window and that Turner let blood drop, when Sandra had made that video, when Philando was registered, St. Mills in that rec center hunted down like a predator. Obama got in office, got elected right back. These are moments that let me remember there's power in black. Yeah. One nation under the Most High. Segregation and rights being denied. Liberation, this is our song cry. For my melanated people, put your hands in the sky. Stand up and raise your right fist up. Said you can stand up and raise your right fist up. Said you can stand up and raise your right fist up. We the birth of our own nation. Pledge allegiance to us. Yeah. And definitely empowered. Temporarily exiled were my people. Long said to be outcasted and outlasted. Nonetheless, they are my people. Surely no sequel brought into a situation saying we not equal. Treated like dogs, but were whipped for barking. Finally, we barked and barked until eventually that bark came with a bite. Symbolized the spark, but no longer. Now it's a light golden. Pledge allegiance to us. One nation under the Most High. Segregation and rights being denied. Liberation, this is our song cry. For my melanated people, put your hands in the sky. Stand up and raise your right fist.
Welcome back. Omari the Great, the 18-year-old superstar, it's his birthday today. He's been spitting like this since he was like 12, 13. It's just amazing. So, Omari, salute to you, King. Happy birthday, little brother. Now, Jay, you still there?
Still here, my brother. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you great. Talk to me real quick about private equity. I mean, what is this? It's, to me, it sounds like just a private club of people with ownership. And that's just using the concept.
You know, think of it this way with private equity, brother. With government funding, with traditional bank lending, there are things that restrict and you're confounded by certain parameters. And for the layperson, as you think about private equity, think of it as galvanizing resources to take control of businesses, of communities, of developments, and having the sort of latitude and longitude to act more quickly, to have things occur more rapidly. It's just like anything else, brother. When you have the capacity to put funds together, dreams become reality based on your own terms. Private equity is looking at taking high net worth individuals, or leveraging resources from the community, because private equity also often gets a name that lives in rarefied air. But there, you know, through the magic of crowdfunding and a number of different other sources, private equity can take on new forms going into the future. That if we want to build a hotel in our community, why couldn't we put the equity together privately through community engagement, through individuals that care, want to come together and change the face of our community, and we do it on our own terms? It's absolutely possible. And so in my mind, a layperson definition is private equity is the power to do things on your own terms and to call your own shots. And traditionally, that's been for the very affluent, the people that understood money and were able to move money within their own circles. But I think through what we use with Greenwood Archer, the private equity company that we form, it's a human capital approach. We want, with any development or any businesses that we're looking to invest in or want to build out, we're always thinking about the people attached to that business that make the business successful, but also make the community successful.
So we have a little Addison Warner, and I'll use my daughter. She's 5 years old. She's 6 years old. And she wants to go in this. She wants to go into this field of private equity. What mm-hmm. should she start doing in kindergarten, in middle school, in the 10th grade, or as she plans to go into her freshman year of college?
You know, she should look at economics. I mean, as a study and as classes that she should take, you know, open it up, as simple as opening up her personal bank account and going to get to know her banker and understanding how money works, how money flows, how money grows, understanding the language of money. We don't have very many PhDs in economics. Got plenty of people going to get law degrees, medical degrees, but not enough people really studying the field of economics, of money and how it works, how our economy moves and grows and expands and contracts. We need your six-year-old daughter to start thinking about how do you build infrastructure and that economics degree, that business mindset certainly could play a role in that, brother. I think that there are financial literacy courses at the basic level where she understands the basic level of check writing and balancing a budget and how money works and grows in that way. And as she grows and becomes more advanced, yeah, I mean, any business school or economics degree, and let's say she goes to Spelman and majors in economics, but then goes on to
Florida
A&M. Business school, Florida A&M, I'm sorry, SBI, let's get it right. And she majors in economics, and she goes to Wharton Business School to further that education with an MBA focused in economics. We need people that understand how our economy works, how money works. And it's been the one thing that we've lacked for generations. And I think, you know, starting with someone just like your daughter, we can start to turn that tide and put that at the forefront of, you know, like you said back in the day, oh, man, you could be a doctor or a lawyer. But we never really look beyond that as far as measures of success. That's kind of in every household, that moniker that we attach to success, right? Well, let's expand that. Let's start talking and normalizing conversations around money. Let's normalize conversations around ownership. Let's start to normalize conversations about institution building and community development and projects and ownership. So many kids want to be football players but have no concept of the owner that cuts the checks. We need to change
Absolutely.
The narrative. We need to shift the paradigm.
So awesome, awesome, awesome. If you could go back and you talked about how you went from managing and having millions to sleeping in a storage facility, taking showers at LA Fitness, to managing a global firm, a nonprofit, starting your own nonprofit, what would you tell your younger self?
Relationships matter. I think that
one of my greatest mistakes was thinking that I could do it all on my own. Thinking that I could handle it, that I knew everything, that if I didn't know it, I could learn it on my own, and didn't really value the experience of others in my journey. I think that was one of my greatest pitfalls when I did fall from grace, is that I just didn't have anybody to ask questions or anybody that I trusted to help me transition out of a market that had absolutely collapsed. You know, Ambassador Andrew Young, who I've had the opportunity to sit at the feet at several times, gave me one of the greatest pieces of advice I ever was given. Make your friends before you need them. And I think that's one of those things that ties into how very critical relationships, your what I call, you know, I don't really use the word networking because I'm always focused more on developing real tangible, deep set relationships. But that circle of people that allow you to move forward and always insulating yourself with people that won't allow you to fail. I think I made that error. I made that error in insulating myself for many different reasons. And some of them were depression, but still insulating myself from the world and thus not having the village that it would take for me to transcend and to excel. And certainly now I'm all about the village, all about collecting people in my life that can help me become the best person that I could possibly be.
Awesome. We got a couple callers on the line, and I'm going to call you out by the last four digits of your number. So if you have a question and I call your name, I'll call you a couple times. If you don't go, we'll go on to the next person. So 2317. 2317, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. I don't have a question. I'm just listening, brother.
All right. Awesome. Thanks for listening for the first episode.
It's Gary Davis.
Oh, man. All right, guys. We're going to have Gary on and talk about the amazing things that he's doing. But real quick, I was connected to Gary. Have not met him as of yet, but he's getting young people out of prison.
I love it.
As simple as we can say, showing another opportunity, exposing them to better, built relationships with the Fulton County District Attorney, and getting young men out of prison. Not only getting them out of prison, we just had National Signing Day. He was on the radio the other night with some of the young kids that he had with full scholarships to D1 schools. But they were facing 20-plus years in prison. Gary, hats off to you. You will be on the show. And guess what? He's one of the organization we'll be seeding through the Give 12 Pod.
I love it.
Thank you. All right. 9893, you there?
Yes, I'm here.
You have any questions for us?
Actually, yes. I heard basically when we were talking about the children and dreams and getting them to kind of step up to their own aspirations, what would you guys suggest to a parent who notices that their child may be so overwhelmed with the social issues that are happening today that they don't have a knack for dreaming, that they're missing that component for actually thinking and reaching beyond the stars with their own personal dreaming? What would you suggest a parent can do to kind of ignite that in their child?
You know, I think one of the things is that dynamic absolutely happens with adults as well, that we stop dreaming as adults, and we also don't sometimes realize the impact that it has on our kids. I know I grew up in a household where there was actually a poem, and this is back before you had cordless phones and everything, but next to the phone, next to the corded phone in the kitchen, was a poem about how wishing got you nowhere. And it was a culture in my house that wishing just it wasn't worth the time. And I will tell you this, though, in asking your kids hard questions about their biggest dream or observing what they like to do or exposure, at the end of the day, I am a huge fan of exposure. and taking your kid out of their comfort zone and showing them something new and different to get those endorphins firing, to get them out of their comfortable space, to disconnect them from the machine, from the Facebook, Twitter, Snapchat, Instagram, and put them in an environment where they got to be a little bit uncomfortable. Shake them out of that zone that they're in that is impacted by all the social soup that's around their brain, and give it a little, give their brain some room to breathe. You know, with, I have a Boy Scout troop, and I take kids from the inner city out into the woods and out into the wilderness. Totally different environment. I take away all of their cell phones. And for that moment, for that weekend or that week, depending on how long we're out, they've got to think differently. They've got to explore new things. They've got to come up with new ways of doing things. And, you know, it's always good, in my opinion, to shake things up. But at the end of the day, though, we always have to ask ourselves, have we even asked the question, where our kids, what our kids are thinking? What is their biggest dream? What is it that you want to do? And maybe taking some of those cues and finding ways to expose them to the reality of their aspiration.
You know, another thing that I think about and what we do so wrong or as an injustice to our children, at so much of a young age, we ask them what they want to be when they grow up. The question should not be what they want to be when they grow up, but why they want to be. And it taps into them finding who they are and walking into those dreams. And I'm a firm believer that those dreams help define your purpose. Like it's in those sleeping times as a young child that your purpose in life is defined. But we put so much pressure on children to be something, to be what, and not focus on that why. When they start to focus on that why and they go into that dream world and it's not the pressure of the world, they will start to dream again. So, you know, kind of empower that child to say, whatever you want, why you want to do it is okay. If you say you want to be a princess, that's okay. If you say you want to be a WWE wrestler, that's okay. But I think a lot of times we stifle the children because it's unrealistic in our mind. But when they start to put those little pieces together, a superhero ends up being a protector. An entertainer or somebody that is always performing, they may have that artistic gift and that's their purpose. But we can't keep focusing on what they want to do. And like Jay said earlier, we must define that why very, very early on. Did we kind of answer that question?
Oh yeah, I love everything that was said. That was awesome. I am actually working with a few younger teens myself. I should say tweens, and I always end up asking them, "Who are you?" Because I find that there are grown adults who don't know who they are to know what their strengths and weaknesses are to kind of get to the point where they can say, "This is what I aspire to," because I know who I am. And so I think that question needs to be asked of youth a little earlier so that they can develop the understanding of who they are first, you know, because the identity years are from 11 to 17. So start asking those questions. Who are you? And then, you know, essentially you'll get to the why, but you got to know who you are first before you identify with the world outside of you. So I thought everything you guys said was really on point, and I'm enjoying the conversation tonight. Thank you.
Awesome. Is this Amy?
Yes, it is.
Hey, I'm good with voices. Amy, thanks so much for calling in.
No problem.
So, Jay, you talked about working with were Boy Scout, and you worked with so many people in the community. You know, you could have gone from homeless and back into a corporate or leadership environment and said, you know what, I got to just focus on me. What was it that made you say, I still have to give back?
You know, it's one of those rare, almost spiritual moments, brother. I'm sitting in the storage unit, and I'm thumbing through a photo album, and I'm looking at pictures of my family, and all these random kids with my family at like Thanksgiving and Christmas time, and I couldn't really place the faces, and there were vague memories, but it was something that I had tucked away in the recesses of my mind, to even try to cope with some of the pain that I was dealing with. My mom, while she was living, was a juvenile justice worker. She worked for the state. And she knew then, like I live by now, you take a kid in a bad environment, no role models, very little exposure, and compounded hopelessness for 10 or 15 years. Why are you surprised that kid's got a gun to your head? They have no value over their life, so how could they value yours? They don't have possessions, so of course they're going to covet and want yours. And at the end of the day, everybody looks for self-dignity. And nine times out of ten, you see that business guy in a nice car with a nice watch, nice shoes walking down the street. They know that that guy thinks that they're better than them. But let's say when I pull out my gun and make you get down and give up everything that you have, at that moment, right at that moment, I feel powerful. Right at that moment, I feel like I matter and I'm better than you. And that dignity portion of some of the things that go on with the criminal element is something we very rarely address, that it's not just the selfish ideology of wanting to steal someone else's stuff. There's some deep psychology about what you just heard earlier, brother, the why and who they are and the dignity and self-esteem and self-confidence that they feel or don't feel. So all these memories started to rush back to me when I made the connection. And my mom used to invite kids that were on her caseload, take them out of the halfway house with the lockup, bring them to Thanksgiving dinner, sit them around a table at Christmas with family, loving on each other and talking about each other and laughing. And, you know, Jason, check under that tree. Grab that box for me. But Jason grabs that box, and it says, for Jason. And Jason opens it up, and it's the transformer that he always wanted. And I started to remember that my mom used to make me do my Christmas list in October so she could understand what kids would really want for Christmas. And I could remember many a time the thing that I wanted most, there'd be a kid at Christmas who would get that gift and I wouldn't. And I had to learn that humility, and I had to learn, you know, what it meant to give and not receive. And I think in my life I had gotten away from that for several years because it certainly is the way that I was raised. But in getting away from it, I found myself crashing back to the ground and saying, wait a minute, Jay, by the world standards, you were a baller. You were successful. You had the cars, you had the houses, you had the clothes, you were doing ballerific things. You were successful, but you had zero significance. You had done nothing to put a dent in this world. You'd done nothing to change the world. You know, I go into the club with a pocket full of money intent on spending it all in the club. But there was no scholarship in my mom's name or my grandmother's name or my grandfather's name, all these people that I lost over the years. So my purpose really became chasing significance and finding a way that I could matter on this planet and doing my part. And that's what kept me motivated, brother. It was a crashing down and crashing back to who I was always raised to be. And it was my chasing significance that led me to Operation Hope, to eventually Phoenix Leadership Foundation, and everything that has happened in between there, brother. And that was my Damascus Road moment. That was my enlightening moment. That was my come to Jesus moment to really turn things around.
Awesome. You know, my dad always says, you have to go through something to get to something. I think we all have those testimonies of going through. But he adds to that and says, you can't stop when you're going through. Because if you're in the middle of that storm and you don't keep going, the rain is going to keep falling on.
Amen.
So you have to go through. So you have to be battle tested. You have to understand loss. You have to understand gain, all of those things to get to where you're supposed to be. So, you've gone through. And it's not saying that you won't go through again, but it's going to take you to another level. So he tells me this all the time. And I think you are true testimony to that going through. We got another caller on real quick. Let's see. We have 4573. 4573, you there?
Peace, big brother. What's good, Jay? It's Darryl.
Oh, my big brother, the king, the father of Momari the Great.
Yeah, man. Just want I've been in and out. I started out listening and heard the fellow king speaking about his peace earlier, and I had to get off for a minute, and I'm getting back on. So initially, I wanted to just shout you out. I know the show was going to be amazing, man. I'm so glad you have this platform right now. Can't think of anybody more deserving to have the platform and who's going to do great things with it. So thank you so much, man, for creating this initiative and allowing people like a fellow king, I think his name is Jay, to be on. And, you know, him being the first one of the many who are going to share their stories and to share a lot of vital information for us, our younger people as well. I did have a question for him. I know earlier he was speaking about the story. I love the story with the barbershop and how he was motivated to become an entrepreneur based on the experience with the barbershop and being motivated by the car and all of this and that. And by the way, I'm with him, and I love the GTs, the Mustangs. Those were classic. definitely classic. I guess when he talked about purpose, which you and I talk about, that's a word that I drive home to my mentees as well as my family. That's something that I live by and abide by as well. My question to him is, what advice do you give people who are seeking for their purpose? How do you seek that? We always talk about purpose and having that why. You know, how is it that you even begin to attain and start the journey of finding purpose and finding that why? I do know a lot of people are lost. A lot of people want certain things, but they just don't know how to get it. As well as I know a lot of people want to do a lot, but don't know how to. Even me and you talked about it, Jason, the other week. You know, I was like, where do we start? There's so many things that we can attack. We have so many things that we could do to be progressive and be liberated and all these different things, but where do we start? The task seems so monumental and it seems so big that we don't know where to go. A lot of people don't know even where to begin. So when you're talking about purpose and that why, I like to hear from him about how do you convey and drive that point home to younger people, or not even just younger people, but people who are trying to find that why. I know what I did for me, and I'm very clear on my purpose, but I want to hear from someone else. Maybe I can add that into what I preach and what I speak on to other people as well. So that's my question. But, Jay, great job, man. Love you, big brother, and keep doing your thing, man. And I'm gonna sit back and listen.
Appreciate it, King. Love you too, man.
And I appreciate the question, brother. I appreciate you calling in. Thank you for even sharing a bit of your testimony. So, brother, I'm going to look forward to the show, Jason, when you have him on. One of the aspects of purpose for me, I think those that will inherit the earth, my friend, are those that can effectively manage pain. And I think pain many times comes, or purpose really many times travels through pain. When someone is flat on their back, the only choice they have is to look up at the sun. And many times when people struggle with what is my purpose, they haven't really gotten to the core of their why. And Jason spoke about a why earlier. just like I had that Damascus moment when I was in a storage unit. This is a kid that was just driving a Benz and living in a nice house, but now I'm living in a 9x9 storage facility. I'm at bottom. So you're talking about self-esteem, self-confidence, and at that point I found my core and thus my purpose. It's really easy to believe the lie or avoid the truth when the lie is paying the bills. And if life is comfortable and if life is fine, it's really easy to ignore your calling, which is your purpose. Because sometimes it takes a little bit of disruption. Oftentimes it's going to be very uncomfortable, but almost in every case, it's going to, you know, charge you to change who you are and how you do things once you've established your why. And that can be a very scary thing. And to even admit your purpose when it may go against everything that you've understood to be you, everything that you've trained and educated yourself for, to go against all of that, or maybe what your parents, you know, you've made your parents proud in one profession, but your purpose seems to be pulling you in a different direction. It takes a tremendous amount of courage to follow that purpose. But sometimes when you're thinking about pain and how things are forced upon you, you find people now, like with me, and people were asking me earlier today about having the courage when problems are big and things seem wide. How do you find the motivation to keep going? And I tell them, I really have a what do I have to lose mentality. I've been at the bottom before, so I'm not afraid of it anymore. So all I have to fear is success, because failure is something I mastered throughout my years. So I'm not going to fear it anymore. So in that, man, you develop this courageousness. And at the end of it also, there has to be a degree of faith. There has to be a degree that you are not ultimately in control and there is something that is guiding you that is bigger than you. And if you don't have that, in my understanding of what purpose is, if you're not able to relinquish a bit of your earthly control to take on something that is beyond you in this world, and hold on to a faith that you cannot see that is around the corner and you can't see the door, that also is a huge blockage and obstacle to people finding their purpose, is a lack of faith. And, you know, I throw all of that into a soup, man, and you find people that have been through the storm, as Jason just said, found that if they kept going on the other side, they find the sun. Or if they've been on their back, all they could see is the sun. They've gone through enough pain to not be afraid of pain because they developed tolerance to the hurt and can only think about the hope and have a degree of faith that says, you know what, if I trust and believe, I'm being led. And there is a purpose in my breathing, and every breath that I take has purpose. And for every day that I awaken, that means that I'm here for some reason. And if I can have the faith that that reason will be revealed to me, everything that I do is an excellence until I find that space where I'm supposed to stride, I'm supposed to run, I'm supposed to take off. But it's a scary place, and that's why a lot of people hide from their purpose. It's going to force you to be different. It's going to force you to change. It's going to force you to maybe go against some things that you thought were true. And, yeah, brother, there are very few people that embrace it, grab a hold of it, and follow it.
Awesome. Hold on.
Awesome.
You know, one of the things I appreciate about you,
and have always appreciated about you. Is your ability to just be really transparent. And the reason we put this platform on is to expose people to how you get there. A lot of times people think, you know, if I work really hard, if I learn all these skills, I'm just going to coast through life. I have a great idea, and it's going to come about. But sometimes life happens, and I really appreciate the fact that you are able to be vulnerable with us, with the listeners, because it just helps that next person on the way.
Well, I think that time is too precious to be inauthentic, brother, and that we spend so much time wearing the mask and we spend so much time chasing perfection, we never really live an authentic life. And scars and all, bumps and bruises and the whole nine. And oftentimes that's one of the great inhibitors to our success as a people, that we're afraid to show the scars and we're afraid to be imperfect. So we're chasing after goals without understanding the journey and without learning about the bumps in the road and the potholes and everything that goes along with it. So when we stumble, we fall, and we refuse to get up because we don't think it's attainable. But I think going forward, brother, if we are truly going to own the vision, be keepers of our brothers, and to build our community, we got to start having real conversations with one another.
Definitely, definitely. Yeah, it's so important to have these real and authentic conversations. You talked about emotional health at one time, and it kind of segues into what we'll do every show. And I like to highlight people that are connected to me. And my brother is a trainer here in Atlanta. So we're going to give the 108 Sports and Fitness Fit Tip of the Week. So when we come back out of it, you'll give your closing thoughts. And the last message. So real quick, we're going to go on to this Fit Tip, and then we're going to get your closing remarks.
No, man, I'll be here.
Good evening. This is Jonathan Warner with your Fitness Tip of the Week. Today's fitness tip is simple. It's finding a discipline that you like, whether it's Zumba, yoga, CrossFit, Olympic weightlifting, finding something that you like to do. Sticking to your friend's plan or a plan you saw online, whatever the case may be, is not going to cut it for you if you can't go and do the actual plan, if you're not going to stay consistent. If it's something you're grudgingly doing, you're not going to be successful. Find something that you like doing so fitness is fun.
And we're back.
Good evening. This is Jonathan Warner.
Oh, sorry about that. And we're back. If you want to find out more fitness, you can visit thejonathanwarner.com. That's www.thejonathanwarner.com. And every week is going to drop us another fitness tip, because if we want to be successful in all parts of our life, we have to have a healthy life. It's so, so important. So, Jay, give us something to walk away with.
You know, brother, one of my many mottos is the one that I have tattooed across my heart, is build as we climb. And people often ask me, so what does it really mean? And it's exactly that. That we have an obligation, brother, to create. Not just reach back with one hand. Reaching back with one hand may bring one person along. But if we're able to build the stepping blocks for anybody that comes along that pathway to come up, to ascend, I think it's our responsibility to build that infrastructure, to build those institutions, to plant seeds that will grow trees whose shade we will never sit under. We have got to shift back into a community-focused, wealth-building, creation and institution-building, nation-building mindset where it's beyond just us. As I said before, our great-grandfathers were builders of things. And out of necessity, they created institutions to serve our needs. They poured into a generation that may have received those gifts and perhaps became a bit entitled. And stop building and stop dreaming. I think it's on our shoulders, sir, to look at now taking on that vision that our great-grandfathers had of a community that was self-sustaining, a community that built on itself, a community the built infrastructure to help the next generation and the next generation. We have all got to do our part. We can all do more. From the smallest action to the most courageous leap, we have to push ourselves to do more. And I think at the heart of it is now looking at how do we build within? How do we build relationships with one another? How do we go beyond just the surface and taking people in their positions and their possessions and really getting into the heart of making the connection, building from within, surrounding yourself with people that won't allow you to fail, getting to know the heart of the person. Because at the end of the day, man, I don't believe in the concept of anybody that's self-made. Everybody that's done anything great in life has relied on someone else to help them get there. And I just want to continue in that methodology. I want to make it more than a methodology. I want it to be our narrative and our reality, that we continue to build community in the truest sense of what community is. And that's what I'll be focused on from here on out, brother, being significant, building our communities, loving mankind, focusing on how we improve the lives of others, building as we climb.
Awesome, Jay. Thank you so much. Tell the folks how they can get in contact with you or get in contact with the Phoenix Leadership Foundation.
Sure. On our website, phoenixleadership.org. Of course, we're on social media with Twitter at Phoenix Leadership. Personally, you can always follow me around at J4Hope, H-O-P-E. And I'm pretty easy to find, sometimes hard to catch. But let's build family and let's continue to make this thing grow. Congratulations, Jason, on your first show, brother. I know you're only going to grow from here, and I'll always hold a cherished spot as your first guest as this show begins to rise and build. But just honored to be a part of it, brother, and honored to be on this journey with you.
Man, King, I totally appreciate you. Super excited about what's to come. I can't thank you enough for what you do in the community. You're a person of service, and I've only known you a couple years, but I feel like I've known you for a lifetime. And I just appreciate the person that you are. So, again,
man,
thank you. And thank you for being our first guest. So, folks, you know, we're moving forward to see the change you want to see in your community. And it starts by owning your vision of success. We launched off with James J. Bailey. You know, this guy is doing phenomenal things in the local community and across this country. And we want to help him. So when we launched the Give 12 Project here in Atlanta, we need you to see that change. $12 per month for the next 12 months. We'll see organizations like the Phoenix Leadership Foundation, the Next Level Boys Academy, the King Center, the Q Parker Foundation, and many others. But we have to do it together. We can't wait on anybody else. So for more information about the Give 12 Project, visit www.ownthevision.com. You'll be able to see what we're doing in the community and how we're helping to seed the vision of success. We have to seed the change, and we have to own our vision. Guys, I thank you for tuning in to this first episode. We're excited. Again, www.ownthevision.com. You can follow us on Instagram at ownthevision. You can follow us on Facebook. Own the Vision Foundation. We're real easy to find, and we want to engage with you because it's about collaboration. We can't build more and more silos. We have to bring the organizations together to the table to see that change. You know, I tell people all the time, we can't expect someone to take care of us. We have the opportunity to invest in our own communities to build for us. Like Jay says, build as we climb. We're going to climb so high. We're going to change. We change our communities faster than you can all imagine. And it's going to start with owning your vision of success, being exposed to people like Jay, organizations like the Phoenix Leadership Foundation, and connecting with like-minded individuals. Folks, I love you, and I appreciate you guys being on. Go own that vision of success.